I'm putting the network news show under programming. Mr. Ruddy has had a mild heart attack and is not taking calls. In his absence, I'm making all network decisions, including one I've been wanting to make a long time. You're fired. I want you out of this building by noon. I'll call the security guards and have you thrown out if you're still here.
Well, let's say fuck you, Hackett. You want me out of here, you're gonna have to drag me out kicking and screaming, and the whole news division kicking and screaming with me.
You think they're gonna quit their jobs for you? Not in this recession, buddy.
When Ruddy gets back, he'll have your ass.
I got a hit, Schumacher, and Ruddy doesn't count anymore. He was hoping I'd fall on my face with his Beale show, but I didn't. It's a big, fat, big-titted hit, and I don't have to waffle around with Ruddy anymore. If he wants to take me up before the CCA board, let him. Do you think Ruddy is stupid enough to go to the CCA board and say, I'm taking our one hit show off the air? And comes November 14, I'm going to be standing up there at the annual CCA management review meeting, and I'm going to announce projected earnings for this network for the first time in 5 years. And believe me, Mr. Jensen's going to be sitting there rocking back and forth in his little chair, and he's going to say, that's very good, Frank. Keep it up. So don't have any illusions about who's running this network from now on. You're fired. I want you out of your office before noon, or I'll have you thrown out.
You go along with this?
Max, I told you I didn't want a network hassle on this. I told you I'd much rather work the Beale show out just between the two of us.
Well, let's just say fuck you too, honey.
Hello, and welcome. How are you doing out there? You all right? It's just me this week, doing a solo cast, as we didn't get together last week to record something. It's on Andy, I'll say it again, you can blame him. As you may have heard from that lovely opening clip, we're going to be talking about Robert Duvall for a bit, who passed away last week, a giant of the silver screen. He was 95 years young. But, you know, I think between him, we had Gene Hackman pass away last year, Val Kilmer and Robert Redford. I decided I might just take a movie of each of theirs and talk about it for a little bit. I recently turned 40, and, you know, as me thinking about my own mortality, or I guess my goal would be to live to 80, so I'm officially halfway through my life. Don't know if any of you guys out there deal in life like that, or think about life like that. You know, people are like, oh, only 80. I'm like, well, 80 is the minimum. And if we go past that, great. They wouldn't gonna want to go too much past that, you know. Don't want to be a burden on anybody, and I don't want to also lose my autonomy, shall we say. But the clip I played at the start there, you know, shifting gears, with Robert Duvall was from the 1976 classic Network, directed by Sidney Lumet. And Duvall is not the main character in it, but he is a pretty significant support character. You know, I could have went with The Godfather 1 or 2, or Apocalypse Now, you know, some of his bigger ones. I mean, he's been in bloody everything. He was in MASH, he was his first ever appearance was in To Kill a Mockingbird, which I saw on the big screen a couple of years ago. My dad, he has no lines in it, but it's unmistakable, that mug of his. But I went with Network because I've seen it a couple of times. You know, it's rightly lauded as one of the best screenplays ever. And it's almost more prescient today than it ever was. The basic plot of the movie, if you don't know, is essentially a newscaster in the 70s for a kind of lower tier network is laid off, or he's told he's going to be laid off in 2 weeks, and essentially then he goes on the air and kind of deviates from the script and says he's going to shoot himself live on air in 2 weeks time, and that pops a big rating. And then he kind of continues in that vein for a little bit. They kind of change it. Instead of him doing the news, he does like an editorial section every night, and the ratings kind of drop off again. And then he has the big sensational moment of, I'm mad as hell and I'm not gonna take it anymore. Peter Finch plays the newscaster Howard Beale. And if you haven't seen that clip, it's incredible. But, you know, where have you been if you haven't seen that? He won the Oscar posthumously for best actor, I think it was. He is the lead of the film. And essentially, Robert Duvall plays a kind of executive for a holding company or, you know, a conglomerate that has bought the news station. And he comes in and makes a bunch of changes to kind of capitalize on this. And they kind of use Beale's notoriety as they're changing format or whatever. And it's essentially reality TV or the precursor to reality TV. And this was made 50 years ago. And the themes in it, the way they talk about things, it's more evident today than it was. Except instead of television, it is the internet or social media or whatever you want to call it, that like these people have such sway, these cults of personality have such sway over the masses, and the more sinister, bigger forces behind it are using this to push their own agendas. And it's like two hours long, give or take. The performances are all excellent. Like Faye Dunaway plays an ambitious programming executive, so she's in charge of kind of the what gets greenlit as a TV show as opposed to the news, and she comes in and takes over the news and makes it more like pop culture TV, which, you know, you see as well now, like in terms of, I don't know where you guys get your news. I get a lot of my news via Twitter. I can't remember the last time I sat down and watched the news, maybe when I was in my parents' house. You know, they would always have 6-1 news on. That to me doesn't exist anymore. I get all mine through Twitter, the internet, what have you. But the idea of the news still being out there to me is kind of a foreign concept. And this is kind of, this was 50 years ago, but it's treating it like that. Like, you know, regular news is boring. It has to be sensationalized. And it's just incredible. It's one of the best screenplays you'll see. There's some ludicrous moments in it where, you know, they are using a militant militia group that films bank robberies to be a lead-in for Howard Beale's show. And they have a scene where they're all in a farmhouse in, you know, Northern California, I think, and all these, you know, militant radicals have all their lawyers around, and they're trying to thrash out the contract negotiations, who gets what percentage of the ad sales, all that. It's very interesting, funny, and ultimately heartbreaking. There's some excellent monologues in it, like that one I played you at the start, but there's also one like Peter Finch as a couple where he just, you know, rains hellfire on the audience. You have Ned Beatty as the head of the conglomerate who has one of the all-time great speeches. And it's on Prime Video if you have it there. If you've not seen it, like, I can't recommend it highly enough. I don't know what's more than 5 stars I could have given on Letterboxd, but it's incredible. And like, you'll watch it and you'll come away being like, oh, we're so fucked. And we are, but not to dwell on that. You know, once there's people still making great art like that, you know, at least for me anyway, that's something to hang on to, right? So yeah, that was the kind of inspiration for the episode. I watched Network, and then I was like, there's a bunch of other Robert Duvall movies on Prime Video. I can watch them too. And the idea being, I was kind of like picking ones that are on streaming services that are, you know, available for most people. And, you know, he's a bunch of his I'd say middle tier ones are available there. But I pivoted away from doing like 5 Robert Duvall movies because I was just thinking of all the heavyweight actors that we've lost in the past year. And, you know, Duvall was in the conversation with Gene Hackman, which is another absolute classic. I just bought it on Blu-ray. Can't wait to break that baby out. But, you know, I wanted to do something about Gene Hackman. He's one of my faves. If you're a regular listener to the pod, you know, like when we did our Tony Scott miniseries, I waxed lyrical about how much I loved him in Crimson Tide and Enemy of the State. And I went back and I watched The French Connection, 1971, directed by William Friedkin, who is a absolute madman and one of my favourite directors. He has done The Exorcist. He has done, I talked about on the podcast, Sorcerer. He's done To Live and Die in L.A. He is just, he's like run and gun back then, like the scenes in The French Connection, the car driving scenes, like, it's in New York and they're just driving like a mad thing, hoping not to crash. And sometimes they do crash, but it's not a serious crash. But that's all real. Anyway, yeah, this is on Disney Plus, and, you know, it stars Gene Hackman and Roy Scheider, two great actors of the 70s. Two of the best, like two icons, really. And they're a duo and they are basically scoping out a heroin bus they think they've stumbled upon to, and, you know, the connection that brings it is from France, but the hence the title. But it really gave me vibes of like The Wire before The Wire. And I, you know, they've talked about it, like The Wire is based on real police work, and this smacks of real police work. This is, you know, apparently Gene Hackman went on ride-alongs with, you know, New York City police cops, because it's New York City, 1971, scuzzy, scummy, fucking tough. And, you know, it has a real, like, authentic grit to it. Like, I talk about Friedkin being a fucking madman. Like, there's a scene where they're testing heroin, and I learned afterwards, like, it's real heroin. Like, they just got a bunch of, they got heroin, and they went through the process of testing it. But, like, it's not a prop, it's, you know, it's real stuff. And it's the same thing when he did To Live and Die in LA. The opening scene is like a chase through an airport, and they said, yeah, you can film here, no problem, but, you know, nothing too crazy. And like William Friedkin is literally jumping on baggage claim, you know, carousels, or like running past people with a gun in his hand, raising like all these unsuspecting civilians. And like, it just made me feel like, oh man, this is the real shit. Like, you know, the plot is fairly thin. You know, Gene Hackman and Roy Scheider are trying to catch the drug dealers, and they're on stakeouts. And but just the way the action is shot, there's some great, like, foot chases. And I was like, oh, the lost art of the foot chase. You know, Gene Hackman with hair, no less, in a Santa suit in the first 10 minutes, chasing somebody through, like, the back alleys of New York City, like, oh, that gave me a good hit. And it has a real downer ending, so much so that I forgot, like, oh, it's just over, like, something happens here, and it's no happy ending. You know, the guy, like, there's a little title card where it's like the French guy, they're calling him Frog One, he like has escaped and was not found, and the two detectives were like taken out of the rotation of narcotics and put somewhere else. And I was like, all right, that's it. And it like won Best Picture, Best Director, you know, three more Oscars. I think Hackman won as well, like, for Best Actor. Roy Scheider was up for Best Supporting Actor. And to me, it was like, oh, like, a movie like this could be a huge Oscar player back in the 70s. You know, you're not really seeing that now. Like, this wouldn't be a spectacle movie, but it is a fantastic watch. And I'm sure a lot of you out there have seen it, but maybe it's just to me to encourage you to go back and revisit it. Because again, it's just sitting there, and it really gave me like, oh man, I want to watch like Taken a Pelham 1-2-3 again, or I want to, you know, dip my toe in some other like scuzzy New York movies in the 1970s or 80s. It's just different vibes, different needs. I want to talk about somebody who, like I've been a big fan of, so much so that I put him on the bracket for the Patreon. If you're a subscriber, you could have voted on who we're doing a miniseries on. Matt Damon won, but I'd put in like some non-franchise crews, and I also put Val Kilmer on there, just because people forget, like, this guy was Batman. He played Jim Morrison, and the movie I want to talk about is his performance as Doc Holliday in Tombstone.
You must be Doc Holliday.
Well, that's the rumor.
You retired too?
Not me. I'm in my prime.
Yeah, you look it.
You must be Ringo. Look, darling. Johnny Ringo. The deadliest pistolero since Wild Bill, they say. What do you think, darling? Should I hate him?
You don't even know him.
No, that's true, but I don't know. There's just something about him. Something around the eyes. I don't know. Reminds me of me. No, I'm sure of it. I hate him.
He's drunk.
In vino veritas.
Agis quod agis.
Credat Judas Sotella, non ego.
Eventus stultorum, magister.
In pace requiescat.
Come on, boys. We don't want any trouble in here, not in any language.
That's Latin, darling. Evidently, Mr. Ringo's an educated man. How I really hate him.
What's it, Johnny?
Tombstone, a movie that I have had on my radar list, whatever you want to call it, for the last while now. And if I'm being honest, I was maybe using the Val Kilmer miniseries as an excuse to watch it. But you know what? I fired it up again. It's on Disney Plus. Val Kilmer plays Doc Holliday. Don't know who Doc Holliday is. but this movie is, like, it's a Western, and it's about Wyatt Earp, Doc Holliday, and the two other Earp brothers that come to the town of Tombstone and fight a bunch of baddies called the Cowboys, which, you know, that's a ding against the movie, I will say. And this movie is fun. It is fun, but it is pure 90s movie making. It's made in 1993. It is soundstage ahoy. It reminds me of Back to the Future 3 Western. You know what I mean? It is... but there's something comforting about that. Like, I was going to say, it is fake. You know, it's very fake feeling. It doesn't feel super authentic, even though they went on location, built a bunch of sets, you know. Yet they feel like you're on a soundstage. I know I'm kind of contradicting myself there. It's just the vibe you get from it. But what it does have, it has a bunch of guys being dudes, Hollywood guys. You know, I say Kurt Russell plays Wyatt Earp. You have Val Kilmer as Doc Holliday. You have Bill Paxton as, I think it's Virgil Earp, his brother. You have Sam Elliott as his other brother, who I can't remember. Maybe he's Virgil, I don't know. But, like, that's a great four right there. And then the leader of the bad guys is Powers Booth in a lot of tan. I think he's supposed to be Mexican. I'm not sure. Even though he speaks with his usual Powers Booth accent. You have Michael Biehn as number two, Johnny Ringo, in that clip there. And you have a bunch of other guys just popping up. Like, Billy Bob Thornton pops up as a belligerent car dealer. And I was like, it's Billy Bob Thornton. Now, he has hair and he's a bit heavier. But, like, oh yeah, 93. You have Billy Zane show up as, like, one of the acting troupe that comes into town. Thomas Hayden Church is, like, one of the local roughnecks that wants to get into it. You have Terry O'Quinn as the town mayor, aka John Locke as the town mayor, like John Corbett, you know, Aiden from Sex and the City is like one of the higher up guys in Powers Booth gang. And I was like, if you were to make a movie today, there's no way. First of all, I've named 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, like 12 people there. There's no, like, give me a movie with 12 that guys these days. Doesn't exist. So like that made me nostalgic. But the Kilmer performance, which is what I was really watching for, even though look, I'm a huge Kurt Russell fan, and he's really good in it, but Kilmer as Doc Holliday, it is a really strange, affected performance, but like, it's class. It's really class. Like, it is something that, I don't know, it kind of reminds you like of what a strange movie star he was, and like the things he would do and try, like, you know, it kind of, you know, you look back on his career after Batman, and I guess the Saint is after Batman, like, which was his other big franchise attempt, and then they had At First Sight, but it kind of like The Wilderness, like when we did Bad Lieutenant, Port of Call, New Orleans, like Val Kilmer's in the movie for like 10 minutes, and I'm like, oh, you're not really utilizing Val Kilmer. It was only really when Kiss Kiss Bang Bang came out that he kind of came back into it, but even that didn't last too long, which is a shame. And you know, the scenes in this movie, like he plays somebody with tuberculosis, a la the sickness you get in Red Dead Redemption 2, so they call him a lunger. Hey, that guy's just a lunger. And he gets progressively sweatier as the movie goes on. But like, I was really affected by like how tender his performance is, even though he's, you know, one of the fastest guns in the West and is gonna kill anybody, but like how he's a drunk as well, and he plays his drunkenness up to the crowds in it, but also like, you know, he's dangerous, he has this weird menace about him. And yet there's a vulnerability because you know he's sick and he's not really long for this world. And the relationship between him and Kurt Russell's character is, you know, by the end of the movie, it's almost like, not a love story, but kind of. And it kind of reminded me a little bit of, obviously it was much more sadder because you knew that he was really ill, he had throat cancer when he was in Top Gun Maverick, but like he has that quality about him where like he really makes you care about him. And look, the movie is not the best Western you'll ever see, but it is fun, and you know, if you like Kurt Russell and you like seeing a bunch of guys that I just mentioned there, like Bill Paxton, always love to see Bill Paxton, I would recommend. I think I gave it 4 stars. Now people might say that's a bit generous, but you know, there's more to like about the movie than not, and it's not really that it's not like long-winded or anything like that. Like, it kind of becomes a bit choppy towards the very end, but there's some really bravura sequences in it at times. And last movie I'll talk about is 3 Days at a Condor, which is on Sky or Now TV or whatever, the movie channels, as we used to call them. And it's Robert Redford from, let me get up the year, it's in the 70s, 3 Days of the Condor. It is 1975, and Redford, it also stars Faye Dunaway, and Redford is... essentially, he's a spy that works in like a library, and one day the library, it's not really a library, I guess it's kind of like a archive, and Redford kind of brings up something that he's found in the files to his boss, and that gets flagged, and then like a whole kill squad comes and wipes out the whole place he's working, but he has gone for coffee or something, and when he comes back he finds them all dead, and he is on the run for the next 3 days trying to kind of keep himself off the radar. And to do so, like, he kidnaps essentially a woman photographer and like stays in her apartment, and then they get a bit of a romance going on. And it is one of these kind of like, it's, you know, it's a 70s conspiracy thriller, so like it's tight. It, you know, kind of, it's a lot of it is about mood. Redford looks great, as he always does. I will say, like, I can see, like, it's an hour 52. It feels longer than any of the three movies I talked about. Like, and The French Connection is an hour 44. It flies by. This feels longer than Tombstone, which is 2 hours 10, I think, and Network, which is just over 2 hours. But it's worth watching, I think, if you want to see kind of how Redford holds the screen, like what made him a bit of a movie star. And it has one of the bleakest endings that, like, it's a really, they really nail the ending, in my opinion. And has a great score. It's kind of a different vibe to the other two movies from the 70s, saying, like, New York's very scuzzy. In this, it kind of like a bit of a precursor to Enemy of the State, maybe, something like that. Obviously, just without so much technology. But that's on Sky, and it feels like I have the least to say about it. It's probably the movie that I enjoyed the least, but still could really appreciate it. And if you like kind of Cold War spy type stuff, I'd say give this a whirl. I want to talk about a couple of TV shows I've been watching before I wrap it up. Night of the Seven Kingdoms has just finished its first season. 6 30-minute episodes. Like, if that doesn't get your attention straight away, I don't know what will. I thought it was tremendous. I thought it was really, really good. And, like, it kind of has restored my faith in the Game of Thrones universe. It really gave me those early season vibes. It is basically about Sir Duncan the Tall, a hedge knight who, he was a squire, but after his knight has passed away, he goes to this place for a tournament, and it's set over, the six episodes are set over the events of this tournament, this kind of backwater tournament, and like some of the more noble families show up in it, like the Targaryens show up, there's some Baratheons in there, so like names you recognize from the first series of Game of Thrones, I guess, but like no actual characters unless you've read the books. Like, this is based on a novella that he wrote. He wrote three novellas, I think. So, and oh, I say he, George R.R. Martin, and he is quite involved in this one as opposed to House of the Dragon, which he kind of has washed his hands of a little bit. But this is great. Like, there's fighting on horses, there's, you know, mud, there's people eating salt beef and giant eggs, and, you know, there's very little mysticism in it, which is kind of my favourite flavour of Game of Thrones. Like, by the end, I was like, I don't give a fuck about these White Walkers, man, or, you know, I want to see what the Hound is up to, or, you know, stuff like that. Like, or when your man got his eyes crushed by the Mountain, like, that was just two people having a fight, you know. I'd highly recommend that. That's on Sky Atlantic. I get it through my Now TV, of course. And the other show I want to talk about, I talked about it briefly on our mailbag Q&A episode, is The Pit, which the reason why I was thinking about talking to this is Eeyore has just landed on Netflix. If you've never watched Eeyore, Jesus Christ, it is insane how good that show is, and I think we take it for granted. We were very lucky to have that growing up, I think we took, like, if you think back on it, like, that was the show that everybody I knew talked about, the grown-up show, like grown-up drama. And I'll never forget this. There's the Halloween episode with Carter where he gets fucking shaved, or the helicopter episode with your man's arm getting cut off. Spoilers if you haven't seen it, but anyway, you don't listen to me. But The Pit is essentially, and I believe it was supposed to be, a reboot of Eeyore, and then they couldn't come to terms on agreement with the Crichton family, so then they just decided to make it an emergency room in Pittsburgh, and they call it the Pit, and each season is the course of one shift. So the first episode, the first season is a 15 episode, so it's 15 hours in one day, and it's all about, I didn't mention that it is, you know, Dr. Carter, Noah Wiley from Eeyore is playing Dr. Robinovich, aka Dr. Robbie, and it is him as the attending, so he's in charge of everything. He has a couple of, I think he's a chief resident there with him, and a couple of other, you know, third or fourth year residents, and then a bunch of med students that start on the day as well. So you're following all these different characters, and they do a really good job of, you know, fleshing them out and getting you invested in all their storylines. And it's set on the day, on the anniversary of, like, the death of Dr. Robbie's mentor, I believe. So he died a few years ago in the show on this day, and Dr. Robbie has to try and keep it together, but he's slowly coming apart at the seams and all the shit he has to deal with. And it's just really fucking good. Like, I, like, myself and Faye are sitting here watching it, and, like, at times be like, are you crying? Like, no. Or the Bam Margera, yeah. It's just really affecting. I'm watching that through nefarious means, but I believe when HBO Max launches, it'll be on that. I think that you get that as part of your subscription to Sky or Now TV. They just added on to that there, so it should be available for everybody to watch. We're in season 2 at the moment, which is set on the 4th of July, which is very interesting. I mean, the first season was incredible. This season is pretty strong as well so far, but we're not all the way in, and it is still airing at the moment, week to week, on HBO. But it's one of the best TV shows I've seen in the past few years. Like, really, really good. So I'd recommend you give it a go. And it's, if you want gore, it has the gore there. It has eye stuff. It has fucking shoulders getting popped back in. It's good shit, man, as they say. And one last thing before I go. I don't know if your algorithms are anything like mine, but I am seeing so much press and so much clips for a show called Nirvana the Band the Show, and it's because there's a movie coming out called Nirvana the Band the Show the Movie. So I started to watch Nirvana the Band the Show. It is two characters, Matt and Jay, I think they're playing themselves a la Flight of the Conchords, and their goal is to play a club in Toronto, I believe, because they're Canadian. It's a place called the Rivoli, and it's just like a bar, but they keep coming up with schemes to get put on the show or get put on the stage there, and they get foiled at every turn or whatever. It's very funny. It is very creative. It kind of, like, at the start I was like, oh, I kind of get it, and then it would be like, oh no, it's going like a layer deeper with the joke of something that they kind of threw away 5 minutes ago, and you're like, oh, they're bringing back, like, at one point they start doing a whole riff on Home Alone, and I was like, I did not see the episode 15 minutes into it going this way, but yet it makes total sense when you think back at it. You can't get it anywhere. I might put a link in the show notes. You can watch it online, sure, but, like, it's not going to appear on your TV unless you're casting it. I just wanted to put it in because I don't, maybe you are getting it on your Twitter feed or your Instagram feed. The director of it and one of the creative forces is the same director and writer of Blackberry, starring Glenn Howerton, from a few years back, which I really fucking liked. So yeah, I recommend you give it a go through my link that I'll put in the show notes, or you could, you know, you can Google, you can do the work yourself. And speaking of doing the work, you'd be doing the Lord's work if you jumped on over to the old Patreon and gave us an old €5 subscription. For that small amount of money, you get access to all our back catalogues of miniseries. We've got What's So Great About the MCU, What's So Great About 90s Action, What's So Great About Ryan Gosling, What's So Great About Big Willy's Flops, aka Will Smith's Bad Movies, What's So Great About Tony Scott, What's So Great About Heist Movies, where we covered another Robert Duvall movie, Widows, which Andy didn't really care for. I think it's because it's all about women. And to that I say,
well, fuck me and fuck him and fuck you and fuck the fucking horse you came in on, you fucking asshole! What a fucking asshole you are!
We've also got the films from the year 2007, and we're currently doing the films of Matt Damon. This week's episode is going to be 1999's Dogma, a film that I haven't revisited in a long time, and I'm interested to kick it around and see what Andy thinks about it. I know he used to be a big fan, so... plus, we've got a bunch of other standalone episodes like Perfect Day, Dream Festival. We've got a bunch of top fives, like top five album openers, top five gigs of all time, top five Disney songs. There's a wide variety, a bunch of good stuff there. And again, it's for the low, low fee of €5 a month. But if you can't afford to get... support us with the €5 a month, you can do us one more better by giving me a 5-star review, just like Robert Duvall said he wanted you out by 12 o'clock. You're fired, so you wanted it out by 12 noon. I don't want a 12-star review, I want a 5-star review. A kind of bollock. I made a bit of a bollocks of that, to be honest. I'll own it. There'll be a better one on the pod this week when it's with me and Andy. But yeah, just wanted to get something out there for you guys. Thanks so much for listening, and thanks for supporting the pod throughout these past... I think I looked at it there. Like, me and Andy have been recording as a duo since 2011, on and off. And we've had... this is our third iteration of the podcast. We had Catch of the Day and also Soup du Jour. They were kind of together. And then we had Put an H, Die Hard Simpsons podcast, which you can get on the feed. I think if you go back far enough, there's a changeover happened. And then, of course... we are at the moment at WSGA. What's So Great About? I'm running out of steam here. But yeah, thanks so much, guys. Be safe out there. And I like you as a friend. Of course, another benefit of signing up for the Patreon is you get the big L from me behind the paywall. Okay, it's enough. See you guys.
Look, watch this. You can sing to the titles of the... Super Mario RPG, Super Mario 3, Mega Man, Neo Turf Masters, Breaking Star... you know what I mean, Jared?
Yeah.
Like every star... you say the lyrics of the...
Let me try one. Let me try.
Super Mario RPG, Sonic the Hedgehog, Donkey Kong 3, Adventures of Lolo 1 and 2, King's Knight, Dig Dug, Juman Foo, Harvest Moon.
Did you write this song?
Link Puzzle, Pokemon, Toe Jam and Earl in Panic on Funkotron, Castlevania, Fatal Fury, Ninja Chuchu, Mario Comet, Razor Blazing, Lasers, Basis Loaded, Mega Turrican, Cybernator, Rolling Thunder, Dynastic Hero, Bubble Bobble, Double Dribble, Double Dragon, F-Zero.
I get it, you memorized the song.
F-Zero X, and Donkey Kong Jr. Math, Ninja Gaiden 1, Ninja Gaiden 2, Ninja Gaiden 3, Cruising USA.